Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg, and our guest today is Kathleen Paris, a Badger State business writer who is the author of a critically acclaimed new book, Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice. Paris holds the title of Distinguished Consultant Emeritus from the University of Wisconsin's Office of Quality Improvement. She received the Governor's Export Achievement Award for cross-cultural training for state businesses. Her website, On Effective Meetings, won an international award last year. And she will be leading a four-day retreat for women executives later this month in the Lac du Flambeau area. She also joins us today in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in Madison. At the center of the new book and her system of business ethics is what she calls the Clover Practice. Three principles like the three leaves of a clover. Tell the truth always. Speak for yourself. And declare your interdependence. As you'll find out, the book is not just about business, it's about human interaction in all aspects of life. It's also a scathing critique of contemporary corporate culture, and it's a system of practical philosophy aimed at allowing individuals to realize their potential and to keep their sanity in an often insane world. We encourage you to join our conversation. You can give us a call. Our lines are open right now at 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Or if you are outside the Wausau area, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Kathleen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Glenn. I'm very happy to be here.
Now, let's talk about this this retreat that you've got coming up. This is a retreat for women executives in the Lac du Flambeau area, and it's the last week of July.
That's correct. It starts July 26th and goes till July 30th.
And it's not just you, but you also have somebody who's trained in bodywork techniques and massage therapy, and another individual, a consultant specializing in the design of healthcare. It sounds unusual for a business retreat. What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, women executives can often be isolated in their roles. There are some gender differences. In most organizations, men in higher leadership positions will have internal networks, whereas women tend to have external networks. And we are creating a network through this retreat that we're having. And you noted that we have a bodywork specialist, Cindy Fine from Madison, who owns Hands on Health, because we both believe it's so important to pay attention not only to our mind and the business smarts that we're going to be talking about at the retreat, but also to help people, leaders, have healthier lifestyles. It's so easy in our busy need to accomplish many things. It's so easy to forget that we have a body, and it's for more than just holding our head up. So we really want to work on some wellness and health and just really get outdoors a little bit.
And you're a consultant specializing in the design of healthcare. Why is he involved in this?
Well, I'm glad you asked about him. That's my husband.
Okay.
And he's going to be cooking us nutritious, healthy meals every day.
And this event is taking place in the Lac du Flambeau area at Dillman's Bay Resort. Do you still have openings? And what is the cost, if I might be so bold?
Yes, we still have openings for several more people, and the cost is $1,500, which includes four nights of lodging, all meals, an instructional materials notebook, and an hour therapy session with Cindy Fine. And maybe the most unique thing of all is after the retreat, we will have a mastermind group of all the women who've been part of the retreat. And monthly, we'll get together virtually to talk about how are we doing on the goals that we set for ourselves at the retreat, as well as dealing with common management issues that we're all facing.
And people can find out more on your website, KathleenParis.com.
That's right.
Why a retreat for women executives? You mentioned internal networking versus external networking. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's the connections that people have. In terms of the pure numbers, there are more men in leadership positions at the top than there are women. So women tend to have fewer role models, and so we are really creating our own community here. So that's what I mean by networks. Who's somebody that you can sit down with over a cup of coffee and say, I have this problem. Have you had this before? You have suggestions for me.
The implication is that women sometimes feel isolated and maybe boxed in their own workplace.
Well, that's absolutely true, and I've seen a need for this for some time, and that it just with the challenges that every organization is facing, it seemed to me that this was the time to do this retreat.
Now, your book, Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, this book is not just aimed at women, it's aimed at all people in the business world, and after reading it, I get the feeling that it's got even a wider audience than that.
Oh, I think it does. You mentioned the corporate environment, but nonprofit and public sector organizations really mirror in many ways the situations in the corporate sector. So I really think of workplaces in America as my target group.
Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, there's a pessimistic overtone to that title, the implication that many corporations and companies in America are sick, and if you're not careful and you work for them, they can make you sick.
Well, that's absolutely true, that working in a stressful and dysfunctional environment will make you sick. There's scientific evidence that consistent stress will depress your immune system. And people who have stress at work or who are very unhappy about their work statistically are more prone to a metabolic syndrome, which leads to heart problems and diabetes and other health situations. So there's no question that being in a extra stressful work environment where things aren't dealt with appropriately has an impact on your health.
How common is that? How many of us are happy and pleased and fulfilled in our workplace? How many of us are not? And of those of us who are not, how much of that has to do with working in a sick corporation or a sick company?
Well, let me give you some statistics. Nationally, only 30% of people who work say that they're engaged in what they're doing, that they care enough about their work that they'll extend themselves, that it's really meaningful to them. That makes you wonder about the other 70% of us, if only 30% are really engaged. Three-quarters of Americans say that work is the greatest stressor in their lives. 1 million people stay home every day from work because they're too stressed out to go back there. And when you look at the reorganization frenzy that's going on in all sectors, you get the sense that people are trying to rearrange things, and maybe by having sort of a different organization, the problems will be solved. And sometimes things are improved, but often the problems remain in spite of having a reorganization.
What are the warning signs? If you think you may be working for a sick organization that's making you sick, what kinds of things should you be looking for in terms of your own quality of life, in terms of your own behaviors?
I guess the measure that I use is, can you go home at night after work and enjoy your life? I'm so aware that each one of us only has so many hours, days, minutes on this earth. And I say to people, don't spend your life in a job that makes you miserable or that makes it impossible to enjoy the time that you do have with your family and your time outside of work and with friends. So that's my big one, is can you enjoy your life, or are you just in a knot that you can't get out of, or just churning over things that you were asked to do or that you saw happening? And the second measure, I think, of an organization that you should get out of is one where you cannot respectfully tell the truth.
Now, is this a message that you should even be pushing right now? Most people that I talk to are happy they've got any kind of job at all, let alone searching for perfection.
Oh, well, perfection's off the table, so I'm glad you mentioned that. No situation is perfect, and as I say in the book, we cause some of our own problems at work by how we handle situations, so it's by no means one-sided.
But what I said, you know, a lot of people today, given the current economy, a lot of people are lucky they've got any place to work at all, let alone a place that makes them feel satisfied or fulfilled.
Yes, I think people definitely are aware of that. But this is the time to be preparing because we know the economy is cyclical. And it's going to come back. That is my firm belief. So this is the time to take that class you've always thought you should take so that you expand your job repertoire, to get involved in your professional association. I can't think of any occupation that doesn't have a related professional association, that has professional development conferences. Even in your own organization, unions hold professional development events. They have panels. This is the time to, if you think you need to make a job change, this is the time to be preparing. Volunteering in the community, this is a time to make your, you know, get your networks going. So I'm not telling people to bail out into the uncertainty of no job at all. In fact, there's a whole chapter on the book as to how to go mm-hmm. about planning making a job change.
So what you're saying is you can be looking even if circumstances might keep you from jumping at the present time.
That's exactly right.
And what you just mentioned about volunteering, I find that interesting because especially in these hard economic times, we need all the volunteers we can get.
That is for sure. Every social agency and nonprofit group has lost funding, has lost people, has lost resources. So if you are willing to extend yourself into the community, you will be welcomed with open arms.
And that's a great way to make contacts that might pay off for you professionally later.
That is so true. You know, it's kind of a truism that people get jobs through knowing other people or from hearing that there's an opening coming up or being recommended by someone in the company because you know the person. That is really very true. And what better way to make those connections than through being a volunteer?
Kathleen Parrish, she's the author of Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to ask Kathleen about the Clover Practice and these three principles that she's come up with, which she thinks can make all the difference in the world for you. If you'd like to join us, the phone number is 261-6371. That's 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking to business writer Kathleen Parrish, and we'd like you to join the conversation. Do you work for a sick corporation? Is your workplace making you sick? Do you wish that you could achieve something that's closer to your potential? If any of that applies to you, give us a call, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Kathleen, tell us about the Clover Practice.
Well, the Clover Practice is a guide for negotiating your work life every single day. And that's why I called it a practice, is because it's something that you do every day, regardless of the circumstances. And as you said, like a clover, it has three petals or three leaves to it. The first is to tell the truth always, even if we don't look too good and even if it's not convenient, to be honest and to be known as someone who is honest is one of the healthiest things that we can do for ourselves. The second leaf of the Clover Practice is to speak for yourself, because it matters how you tell the truth. You have to say it in a way that other people can hear it. And then the third leaf is to declare your interdependence and really get it that for me to succeed, the guy down the hall has to succeed, and that our organization is like one big living fabric, and that when we pull a string on one end, it's going to show up on the other end.
Well, Kathleen, as I was telling you yesterday when we chatted on the phone, I've been a member of Rotary International for about 25 years, And they have a four-way test. It's not a three-way set of principles. But number one is also, is it the truth? And this seems to be a fairly common guide or a truism in terms of how you should approach your business life ethically. But it is also so difficult to achieve in practice sometimes.
Well, that is very true. And in fact, even though it's a principle that we talk about a lot, we know in advertising there's often blatant dishonesty. Things that go on politically can be very disappointing in terms of their lack of honesty. So we have kind of a two-faced view of thinking it is so important to be honest, but yet in practice, it doesn't always happen. For instance, college students are notorious for coming up with lies as to why their assignments weren't able to be sent in on time. And
handing in papers that are just ripped off the web.
Well, that's another example. Fast Company did a study of thousands of employees in the United States, and the majority said, yeah, I do lie at work. For various reasons.
And again, this is something that seems to be, there's a nod and a wink at the very top levels of society. In your book, you mentioned Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, Scooter Libby, convicted of lying to a jury. You talk about coal and electrical groups paying PR companies to lie about global warming, saying it's a theory and not a fact. You talk about marketers pitching junk food to children and pharmaceutical companies creating a market for drugs by convincing doctors to prescribe them for diseases that either don't exist or maybe the drug shouldn't be prescribed for. So, I mean, this is coming down from the very top levels of American society, and it's awfully hard for us as individuals to apply that in our own day-to-day lives.
Well, you know, Glenn, the good news is we don't have to wait for other people to shape up or to change or for our organizations to get better. We can start right now and make a decision to have a healthier work life for ourselves. And that is what I think is really the good news of the book, is we don't have to wait for other people to change to have a healthier work life ourselves.
But can't you be hurt by this in the corporate world? Let's say your boss wants you to lie for him, or if your boss responds negatively when you stand up and tell him the truth about unethical practices the company is engaged in, or maybe policies or procedures that you think are hurting the company's reputation. If people get hurt in business for that.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, hurt can be at a variety of levels. Sometimes people get upset if their ideas aren't immediately embraced, or if they get in a kind of a heated argument with the boss. So sometimes people will say, okay, I'm never going to give another idea because they didn't do anything about that one, or I got kind of not warmly received. So I was taking that somewhere, but Glenn, I honestly can't remember where I was going with that point.
I've been in situations, and I've worked in a lot of different jobs in a lot of different fields in broadcasting, and also I've worked a lot of factory jobs, jobs where I've done manual labor, like being a dishwasher and being a tire changer and so on when I was younger in life. And there are some situations where you have bosses that you can tell the truth to, and you'll be rewarded for it, where they'll say, you know, I never stopped to think about it that way, or they'll hold you in higher esteem for being honest and bringing problems to their attention. And there are other people. There are other people who will absolutely hold that against you and punish you for it.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what that is? That's bullying. When you respectfully tell the truth and you bring forth information that can help the organization and you're punished for it, that's bullying. And you just have to ask yourself, do you want to put up with that for the rest of your work life? I really believe this, that people have many more employment options, not right now. This is an unusual time in the whole century, in the last two centuries. They have more job options than they think they have.
Mm-hmm.
But people will get stuck, and they'll be afraid. They'll think, oh, you know, I've done this for 8 years now. I don't think I should try to make a change now. People have alternatives. And I guess I just don't want people to stay stuck in jobs that make them miserable, because there are other options. If we're willing to get off the couch, do some career exploration. All the technical colleges in Wisconsin have wonderful career counseling where you can, for no fee at all, go get a sense of what's out there. I'm thinking the occupation I'm in now didn't even exist when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things have changed, and people really don't even know what the choices are. So rather than stay in a job where you tell the boss something isn't working and you get resources withheld or get punished in some significant way,
maybe you should be looking for something better if it's that bad that you can't be honest with yourself and your coworkers.
That is my thesis, is that if you cannot respectfully tell the truth, you should not stay there.
You know, there really is a difference between people who try to always tell the truth and people who don't.
Absolutely. And other people know this difference. The people who've made a commitment to scrupulous honesty, they have kind of almost a field around them of safety where you know that you can rely on this person to be straightforward with you. And that if something isn't working, you know they'll tell you about it in a positive, constructive way. And that you can trust them.
And I guess, you know, if you lie about something, it might help you in the short term. But my experience has been that people who tell the truth and make it a practice to do it always, over the long haul, they are held in more esteem and respected more by other people than those who don't.
That is absolutely true. And, you know, I became aware through going to Al-Anon that there are millions of people in the world who are committed to scrupulous honesty. So in spite of the horror stories about dishonesty and the things we talked about earlier, there are millions of people in this country who want every day to go to work and live their lives in a straightforward, honest way.
Kathleen, I want you to hold that thought. We'll be talking more about the first principle of the Clover Practice, the other two, and what it means to work for a sick organization when Route 51 continues. 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include the Hooper Corporation, providing electric power and mechanical construction services to commercial, industrial, and utility companies throughout Wisconsin and neighboring states since 1913. Information on the web at hoopercorp.com.
We're back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, business writer Kathleen Paris. We're talking about her critically acclaimed new book, Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice. We want to hear from you if you've got something to add to the conversation. If you've worked for a sick company or a sick boss, we want to hear your horror story. Give us a call at 261-6371, 261-6371. Or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Kathleen, we just heard the news story about Lori Schneider, a woman with multiple sclerosis who climbed to the top of Mount Everest. And I couldn't help but think about your book and the fact that the impetus behind it seems to be getting everybody to live up to their own potential.
Well, you know, that I couldn't have said it better myself. And I feel like so many people aren't doing what they could do. Or there's a book called Who I Could Be at Work. And I really believe that people have so much more in them than they're able to present at work or make use of. But I agree, that story just got tears in my eyes. It's a beautiful example.
And, you know,
if a
woman with multiple sclerosis can do that, why are the rest of us complaining?
Well, I think it, in fairness to most people, it's awfully scary. If you have a job and the bills are getting paid, it's frightening to think of, oh, maybe I should try something different. It's very scary. But in the book, I have some success stories of people who I know who made that leap. And they did their homework. They got their training. They didn't make it the leap without a plan. But every single one of those people is in such a better place in terms of their employment because they were willing to, you know, kind of go to the edge of the cliff and jump off believing that they would be able to fly, and all three of these people did.
You have to be willing to take risks to do that, and you also have to believe in yourself. And as you were saying in the idea of the clover practice, number one there is telling the truth. That means telling the truth about yourself. Number two, the second principle is speak for yourself. What do you mean by that?
Well, the two are very, very related. And if I could just loop back to that, tell the truth always first. Part of that is being humble about our reality and what we think is the truth. Every single human being has a pair of glasses, or probably multiple pairs of glasses, in terms of our perception of things.
Some of them are rose-colored, some of them have blinders on them.
Yeah, and we all have them. And the scary thing is we don't necessarily know what they are. Most of them are subconscious. So those blinders that we wear every day that make us either see something stand out more than someone else would see, or things we don't see, those affect how we see reality. So part of telling the truth always, it's really telling the truth as you see it, and then leaving room for other people to have a different view of the exact same thing. It's like when someone swears to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in court, really all they can attest to is that they're telling the truth as they know it. They, in any one of us, that's the best we can do. And so we need to stay humble about our reality.
Now you give an example of negative examples of speech that you can hear in corporate settings. And here are just some of the examples you give in your book. You don't care about this project. You don't understand. You only care about the dollars. You don't respect me. What's wrong with all of those statements?
Well, they are all examples of not speaking for yourself. It's a case where someone is basically taking the temperature of the other person instead of talking about the situation from their perspective. And that's what I mean by speak for yourself. It means saying, I thought we were going to have this project out the door Thursday. It is now Friday. It's not gone out the door. What happened? What do we need to do to get it there? That's a whole different message than you didn't care enough to make sure this got out. And when we're mad, boy, is that the time when we're going to take the other person's temperature and really zero in on what's wrong with the other person.
So maybe if you've been waiting to tell the truth, maybe the time to finally do it isn't when you're good and angry and blood is boiling.
That's very good advice, to cool down and formulate what you want to say so that you can say it in terms that other people can hear it. Because when we're mad, the part of our brain that kicks in is not the part that wants to speak for itself. It's the part that wants to find really a great fault with the other person or the other people.
Now part of the contemporary aspect to that is electronic communication and emails, people who flame on them, and it comes back to haunt them. It's so easy to send that send button, and once you send it, you can't get it back.
That is so true. And in my workshops, I do quite a few workshops around the Clover practice. I tell people, do not try to solve problems, or don't fight via email. It doesn't solve the problem. And in fact, it will, as you said, most likely inflame the problem. And as we've seen recently in the news, they don't go away. And many people don't realize that their email, if it's at work, is the property of the employer. It's not really their own property. And at any time, it can be subject to other people seeing it.
Timing, as you said, is everything. And also another aspect of this, speaking directly to the person about the problem, and I guess that gets into the whole field of gossip, which is something that a lot of people live for in an office setting.
Well, sometimes it's the most interesting thing that's going on. But people don't realize the impact that gossip has on the climate of the organization, because you may be talking about people who aren't there, or you may be part of a group that's talking about someone who's not there in a negative kind of way, and you know that your turn will come. And even if it's not conscious, you know that nobody is really safe, and that you can't trust your colleagues to necessarily be fair when you're not there to defend yourself.
So what do you do if you're working in an organization where gossiping is common, where people are always telling stories about somebody else's love life or other things? How do you break that connection and keep yourself in a gossip-free zone?
Well, it is an area where an individual can be very powerful simply by saying something like, too much information, or I don't really think we should talk about them. They're not here to defend themselves, and we don't really know the whole story. So you can short-circuit some of that yourself if you want to do that. But I think leadership has a real obligation to have a conversation about it and to say that, for one thing, it's a huge productivity drain. Even if it didn't affect climate, which it does, it's a huge time waster. And just having a conversation about the fact that we have enough to do serving our customers, our clients, our stakeholders, and providing each other with what we need, that we don't have time to talk about other people's private lives.
So management needs to set the tone on that.
And to have a conversation, because sometimes people are confused about what gossip is. If we're going to move next fall, is not the same kind of gossip as who's having an affair with the new boss, you know, for instance. So talking about it is a huge plus from the get-go.
Let's move to the third leaf of the clover. Declare your interdependence, not your independence, your interdependence. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's a hard sell coming right after the 4th of July when we celebrated our independence. But the fact is our organizations in our world, as far as that goes, is so interconnected. But it's hard to see it sometimes when you're in an organization. And as a consultant, I see tremendous competition within organizations that I wish, if they could take all that energy and focus it on serving the customers or coming up with a better mousetrap, it would just be so much healthier for the organization overall. But we're set up to compete with each other in our modern ways of organizing, which tend to be in silos.
And that's not just competing corporation against corporation. It's the workers inside the corporation who are often trying to cut each other's throats.
That's true. And sometimes leaders actually pit people against each other in the belief that it's cementing their own authority or their own power. And to some extent, it can have that effect. If people are fighting with each other, they're less likely to focus, you know, on the higher levels
now,
of
this
the organization.
This is completely different from what they do in Japan.
Yes. In fact, in most of Asia, you'll find a very different mindset where the competition with the other the competitors is fierce, and it's almost like James Bond in terms of surveillance and industrial espionage. It's part of doing business in Asia. But within that company, there's no question that we're on the same team and we're not going to undermine each other and we're working towards the same goals. So it's a big cultural difference. But
we
could learn a lot.
Our culture, as you say, we worship the individual, the Lone Ranger, John Wayne, Rambo, Dirty Harry, the Terminator, Batman, Spider-Man, Jason Bourne.
Yes, we have a hero. Kind of a hero worship culture.
And how realistic is that?
Well, I don't think it's very realistic at all. And I use in the book the example of a surgeon. The very best surgeon in the whole world will not have good outcomes if the person who cleans the surgical suite doesn't do their job properly, or the person who sterilizes the instruments, or reads the blood tests, or takes the blood tests, takes care of the patient. Everybody on that team is essential.
And that brings up something else. We were talking about individuals maybe at the same level competing against one another, but maybe the people on top need to have a little more respect for the people on the bottom of a corporation. And we'll be talking with Kathleen about that right after this short break. We want you to join us, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg, our guest today, Kathleen Paris, Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. Business writer Kathleen Paris is with us today, and I'll give you those phone numbers, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We're talking about sick corporations and how Corporations in the United States too often pit worker against worker, and too often, Kathleen, it seems to be the person on the top gets all the credit, and the person who actually does the physical work gets very little of the credit at all.
Well, that is so true, and it's an illusion. And I talk in the book about illusions, that it's one of the things that keeps an organization unhealthy, is if it has that illusion. But if we really believed that every person is important, we would do things differently. We would say thank you a lot more and express appreciation for others in the organization who have helped us.
Well, one of the things that came up, registered in my mind is CEO pay. You know, a chief executive officer used to make maybe 10 or 20 times what the lowest salaried worker made. Now it's 100 to 200 times. And in the auto bailout, we had executives making tens of millions of dollars a year. They weren't necessarily blamed for the company's problems, but it was a union worker on the assembly line who's paid too much an hour, whose pension is too good, whose health benefits are too good. And this culture just seems to be pretty strongly ingrained.
Yeah, it really is. And that's another difference between the United States and Japan. There isn't that huge discrepancy between the people who work in the factory and the plant and upper management. That is something that is very uniquely American.
And how much of this has to do with what you refer to as the traditional patriarchal hierarchy organization in America?
Well, it's the basis, I think, for that whole situation, that we have ingrained in our minds that patriarchal, hierarchical organizations with command and control, where people get told what to do, is the best way to organize to get good work done. And we know the organizations that win the Baldrige Award, that are the best places to work, they show up on the bottom line as being financially successful, much more than organizations who don't tend to their people.
Let me quote something from your book. You write, "The centralized power of most workplaces clashes with beliefs we hold dear as Americans. The vast majority of the organizations in the United States were founded on patriarchal principles that are very much at odds with democracy." What do you mean by that?
Well, we're Americans, and we want to participate in the decisions that affect us. It's in our genes. It's why we're the United States of America in the first place. And I think it's a huge disconnect for us to walk into organizations and in some ways become children. You know, I think about people who buy cars and get their own children to work and take care of aging parents and maintain their home and make important decisions, and then walk into the door of where they work, and they become a child. Now some of this is our own collusion, that we are willing to take that sort of that parent-child relationship. But it's the model that we have, and management is kind of a class versus a very specialized function.
People at the top are smarter than people at the bottom. We don't need to listen to people at the bottom. Workers have to be told what to do, and they need to be watched. And people at the top of the organization, of course, are much more deserving of pay and privilege than those at the bottom. I mean, that's the way things run.
That seems so. I saw one statistic that 81% of managers say they know they should involve people in decision-making, but they just don't do it. So there's a sense that we should be doing things differently, but there's a very small minority of, and it's not just companies, it's organizations overall, a small minority that have made a choice to do things differently, and they're successful.
What are those organizations?
Oh, it's the organizations that win the best places to work in America, places like Patagonia, Cisco, Google. They pay attention to the needs of people. And I believe it is my thesis that unless leadership cares about the climate and mm-hmm. how the organization is for those who work in it, it will default to being unhealthy.
Well, like, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I've worked in a lot of factories. I was an arc welder for a while at a prefabricated building corporation. I've worked on a lot of assembly lines earlier in life. And people on the factory floor really can sense it when management doesn't care about them. And it affects productivity all across the line. I think, from my own experience, and again, this is earlier in my life, but things like industrial sabotage happen much mm-hmm. more frequently in workplaces where the worker feels that management just doesn't care.
That is absolutely true. I had a student once who worked at an auto plant, and she said that on Fridays they put marbles in the doors, knowing that it would cause a problem later, because it was the only way that they could strike back at what they felt was not a good situation. This was a long time ago, but it's a good example of people doing things because they just don't feel like there's another way to express their upset.
You know, and later in my life, I was a news director for a number of years, and I'd have to send crews out to cover stories. My experience was that the people that you could always trust to give you the best take on a situation were the photographers, the cameramen, the people who had to bring back the pictures and the sound. And I've been in shops, where I wasn't in a management position, where those voices weren't listened to. And I think that's common in America. I really do.
It is common, but I have worked with many organizations where leaders have made a choice to do things differently. And that's how I know that it's possible to have an environment that is respectful of people, that involves people. And I firmly believe this, that any leader who uses the Clover practice, who tells the truth always, speaks for themselves, and sees how everything is interconnected, people will follow them to the end of the earth.
And there are too many supervisors, you write, who simply aren't doing their jobs as managers.
Well, it goes back to what I said about how we think of management as a class of people versus a very difficult and specialized function. Overall, we don't give managers enough training, enough support, enough coaching. And we think because someone is good at what they do, that they're going to be good at supervising other people. And it's a very difficult job and requires maybe a different skill set than someone has because they happen to be good at their job.
And often we will promote people into positions where, they simply shouldn't be managing because they were doing well in some other area. The book that came out in the 60s, The Peter Principle, where everyone's promoted to their level of incompetence.
It was all
tongue-in-cheek, but there was truth behind that.
There was. And in many places, being a manager or supervisor of other people is the only way that you can make more money. But that's because that's how we've decided it's going to be. And I just feel, Glenn, that I need to say that I have seen some of the best managers in the world. And I was with a company for a kind of a picnic a couple weeks ago, and they talked about why they loved the president of this company. And they said every Friday he would come by and ask them how things went during the week, was there anything he could help them with, mm-hmm. and he thanked them for what they did for the company. And it was absolutely a wistful situation. And the company was then bought out, and things changed, and people kind of went their different ways. But people still came back together, had a party together, and talked about how this man's leadership made such a difference for them.
So if you're in management, listen to the people who work with you and realize that everybody in the organization is just as important as everyone else. And if you're an individual, again, this Clover practice of yours, a way of keeping your head together and staying sane in sick organizations. Give us the three principles again very quickly.
Tell the truth always, speak for yourself, and declare your interdependence. And Glenn, I have to tell you that this has made all the difference for me and my work life. I know it works because that's what I live.
Kathleen Paris, and again, you've got this Women's Executive Retreat. It's July 26th through July 30th at Dillman's Bay Resort, and it's not just a management retreat for women. It's also holistic in the sense that you're talking about massage therapy and caring about health as well as those executive techniques that are so important.
Yes, yeah, strengthening that mind-body connection.
Kathleen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Glenn.
Kathleen Paris. You can Check out our website at KathleenParis.com. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer, Scott Clark. Thanks to Rick Kirkpatrick for our ISDN connection with our Wisconsin Public Radio studio in Madison. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. A reminder, you can communicate with us now on Twitter and Facebook. Find us on Twitter at twitter.com/Route51Show. And if you're on Facebook, put Route 51 in the search bar and then click on the fan page. Route 51 can be heard Thursdays at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and now on WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.